Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And I'm not talking about myself right now. But if you said that the other way around, would it work? Can you be religious but not spiritual? We invited Linda Mercadante, a professor at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio, to talk about that today and talk about the trend of people who say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. She studies such things and started off herself as a spiritual but not religious girl growing up in New Jersey. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Appreciate it. How common is that phrase now? It seems like we hear it all the time, but how common is it really?
It's actually quite common. There have been extensive and very, very reputable surveys done all the way from the Pew Forum all the way down to Parade Magazine and Newsweek, and they've all documented the same thing. It's at least 25% of the American population, and for people that are younger, say born after 1956 or even later than that, it could be as high as 75%. It's very high.
What does it even mean anymore? Does it mean different things to different people?
I think it does. The confusion is that people try to separate these two things, and in fact, it is almost impossible, if not extremely difficult, to separate them. That's what I've been studying.
The chairman of the Department of Religious Studies at the College of Charleston said that the concept has been evolving now for like 100 years. Mm-hmm. And I think when you and I first talked about this almost a year ago, it was in response to a show I had on the history of a cult in the United States, and which a cult is a kind of a misused word too. But that's when you brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I agree with that person that you just quoted because historically, although the term wasn't used in the 1800s, it was a function of some different sort of metaphysical beliefs that were going on in the 1800s, and it's kept going on, but it's been more of an undercurrent. It's only recently that it's become a major talked about and claimed phenomenon. Previously, it was a small minority of the population, and people were aware of them, but it wasn't that they weren't dominating the discussion.
When did it emerge in, I guess, what we think of as popular culture?
Well, I have my own theory, and that's because the theory I have is that it got traction during the rise of the addiction recovery movement, and that reached its height in the 1990s. And I'd say that although it's still the addiction recovery movement is still very popular and functional, but it was in the 90s. It was like almost everybody was involved in something. And the thing that they like to say there, the first time I ever heard I'm spiritual but not religious was then, as I was doing research on addiction recovery and going to 12-step meetings of various kinds. I thought it was limited to them, but as their popularity waned just a bit, this seemed to pick up right afterwards. So to me, these things are completely connected. Not that everybody who says it now is involved in addiction recovery, but the popularity of addiction recovery made this term acceptable, even positive.
Because being spiritual, at least, is something that you hear about a lot in the 12-step program.
Right, exactly. And they would often want to stress that they were not part of any organized religion. And so I think that's where, in my opinion, that's where it became a current and popular contemporary phenomenon.
My guest is Linda Mercadante. She is a professor of theology at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio. We're talking about the idea of spiritual but not religious. If you're spiritual but not religious, or if you think anything about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Do you know someone who's like that, and how does that make you feel? You can also go to allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Do we know much about the demographic of the group? You said that it's much higher, maybe as high as 75% among people born after 56. But in the general population, 25%. So that general population, is there anything that ties them together?
The thing that I'm noticing is that less and less people have been raised in a religious group. And so that has made it a function, spiritual but not religious, a function of not really knowing about religion, not being familiar with religion. I have to say that the baby boomers really started this because the baby boomer generation was fairly, like to pride itself on rebelling against this or that tradition. And so many baby boomers did not raise their children with religion. Now, I was raised without religion, although I'm in that generation. I was kind of an aberration then. Many baby boomers were raised in some sort of religion, and they decided to give their children the freedom to choose whatever they wanted because that was, kind of the style. Excuse me. So So in that situation, people were starting to be raised without it. And so as the subsequent generations have come along, they're just very unfamiliar with religion. And so that's where the term has it's really functional. People are spiritual without being religious because they haven't been raised with religion.
What is religion anymore? Because some folks, some critics of this idea of spiritual but not religious say you can't separate the two. And you mentioned that idea of how difficult it is.
They're coterminous. They really overlap quite a bit. People try to separate them, but human beings are social animals. We tend to organize. So basically, religion is spiritual seeking organized. It's organized spiritual seeking. And every culture has done this in one way or another. So actually, when I say I do agree in a way that these two things can't be separated, but I also say that people are doing it. And so it is happening. But the reason I say that they're definitionally they overlap is because they have four things in common. Both spirituality and religion have four things in common. The first is a belief in some kind of transcendent dimension.
There's something out there.
That there's something higher than you, like what they say in AA is a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the desire to connect with that force in some way. Then there are rituals and practices that enable you or facilitate that connection. And then there are behaviors, or you could call moral behaviors, that are the outworking of that connection. So both religion and spirituality have those things in common.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org to talk about the idea of spiritual but not religious. You actually reduced it to some letters, S, B, and R.
Yes, that's right. I'm not the only one that does that, though.
When I was researching for this, I kept thinking, what is that? What is that? It always takes me a hard time when people use acronyms like that. A lot of folks that I read about over the last couple of days criticize the movement as one that's filled, if you want to call it a movement, and a movement suggests an organization, and it's not necessarily.
No, not really.
But as a group of people, let's say then, filled with a bunch of self-absorbed people.
Oh, well, that's a common criticism that people are narcissistic today, they're self-centered, they're selfish. And while you can say that about anybody really, because that's kind of the common human problem, what I'm finding is I've interviewed a good 70 people in this group who self-identify as spiritual but not religious in my new research project, and I've had informal conversations with probably hundreds, and I've been to site visits. I've visited places where they congregate, and I've taken classes, and I've, yoga and all sorts of things. So I'm very familiar with the phenomenon, and what I'm finding is actually a great spiritual hunger and thirst and a really positive, determined effort to seek those things I just said, to seek a connection with a higher power, with a transcendent dimension, however you define it. So I'm actually finding this new movement very encouraging and positive, in that the people, maybe many as generations have been coming along, they've not been given a whole lot to go by, and so they're looking for themselves, and I think that's very encouraging.
Do you think that just having the conversations with you that they are having as you pursue your research changes the thoughts that they have about this?
It's funny because I do think that, and I'm not doing it for that reason, and I'm definitely not doing any preaching or teaching. I'm really just asking questions and listening. But many times, I'd say 99% of the time at the end, they say, wow, that was really fun and enjoyable, and I learned so many things about myself that I didn't know. And then occasionally my interviewees will come back and ask to meet with me again, and they'll say, now that I have this new insight, what do I do next? And so actually the whole project has been very encouraging. It's made me very optimistic and upbeat about this kind of ferment that's going on in our culture. I mean, in a way, it could be another great awakening like this country had in the 1700s and 1800s.
It feels like therapy when I hear you describe it that way.
Well, there's a lot, a lot of people reduce spirituality to a therapeutic dimension these days, good health, good mental health, mental stability. And so, but it's grounded in physical and mental and psychological issues, and I don't think that's bad.
Is there a difference between SBNRs and agnostics?
They're oftentimes the same thing. My interviewees have many interesting ideas about what the transcendent dimension might be. One common thing is that it's an impersonal, non-sentient, in other words, non-feeling force that cannot communicate or guide or even know them, and certainly not love them. And so that's very interesting. And in a way, I find that you know, there's a truth about that, and yet it's a little diminished, I think, from what I at least have discovered through my connection with religion. So I do think that it's a concept or it's a feeling that could be developed and deepened. And to me, religion is what deepens that. That sense of connection, that desire for it, gets deepened by organizing people around it and working together. And that's what religion is.
In organized religions, when they talk about faith, are they talking about faith in that particular doctrine, or are they talking about faith in the fact that there is that transcendent dimension?
Well, that's a great question. I think sometimes we've reduced it to faith or belief in particular ideas, faith in belief or faith in ideas, and I do think that's a mistake, because it's really meant to be faith in, and you know, I speak from my own perspective, faith in God. It's faith in a being, in a power, in a force. It's not faith in an idea. But some people have reduced it to that, and you know, that's maybe what has led to somewhat of a reaction against religion.
I was wondering if in your research you've discovered periods of uptick. In other words, during all the scandals mm-hmm. over the last 10 years, yeah. over the pedophile priests mm-hmm. and the Catholic Church, during the period when a lot of people were raising money on television, there were the TV evangelical mm-hmm. Thing that seems to have quieted down a little bit. Does any of that have any impact on it?
Very, very much. Very much. In fact, as much as the addiction recovery group might have given this a push in this direction, I think it's also a reaction against what some people see as the co-opting of religion by a conservative politics. And people don't think that politics should be co-opting religion. And I think they've reacted negatively, especially ones that don't have familiarity with other forms of religion, progressive forms, moderate forms, you know, social action forms, people that just identify it with what they hear in the media. Many have wanted to reject religion because of that. And I understand why they're doing that.
A lot of people who call themselves fallen Catholics, and I'm sure you've heard the phrase before, it's pretty common. Mm-hmm. Do they tend to be people who are spiritual and not religious? Do you have any sense about that?
I can't give you numbers, but uh-huh. I do find many of my interviewees have been Catholics at one time. And you know, they used to, in the 12 steps, they used to say, I'm a recovering Catholic. So,
yeah, that's another phrase.
Yeah, right. So I'd say there are some, and many have minimal connection with, say, Protestantism. So really, the people are coming from all different places, and many have had no religion whatsoever. Their parents didn't practice either.
The rector of an Orthodox church I was reading wrote that one group of spiritual but not religious was influenced by the intentional teaching of their own post-liberal mainline churches that say there are many ways to God, mm-hmm. That my way is not necessarily your way. So it's actually coming from a traditional pulpit almost.
Actually, you're right. There's been some history books that show that actually mainstream and liberal Protestantism has actually helped this helped their own declining, you know, pew enrollment, so to speak. Yeah, I think actually that is part of it.
The you don't need me,
yeah.
But it's nice you're here anyways.
I mean, it's unfortunate, because then they look around and say, wait a minute, where'd everybody go?
We're going to have to return, and I do want to talk with Linda Mercadante about her 2006 memoir, Bloomfield Avenue, A Jewish Catholic Jersey Girl's Spiritual Journey. When we return, we welcome your calls and your emails as well, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and make your comments or questions there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and at noon, fresh air will be here. The celebrated VDOC Society of Philadelphia solves the world's unsolved murders. On the next Fresh Air, meet a profiler, Richard Walter, one of the Society's founders who has logged over 22,000 interviews with convicted criminals. That discussion and much more on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 83 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a high of 90 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 72. Sunshine and another humid day for Friday with a high of 90. And looking ahead to the weekend, some sunshine for Saturday and a high of 92. There is a chance of afternoon rain on Saturday. Partly sunny on Sunday with a chance of rain and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Linda Mercadante. She is a professor of theology at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio. That's in Delaware, Ohio. She is also the recipient. She was of the Henry Luce Foundation's. She's one of the six scholars from the Association of Theological Schools in the United States and Canada to receive or be a Henry Luce III Fellow in Theology for 2010 through 2011. Right. And tell us why you received that honor.
Well, it's a competition, and it's open to all faculty and all Association of Theological Schools accredited schools across the U.S. and Canada. So that's hundreds and hundreds of professors. Of course, not all apply. But anyway, they look for people that are making innovative contributions to the field, not just theology per se, but anything in religion. And they choose six a year, and I was very blessed to receive this award, and I'm very grateful. I have a full year sabbatical now, thanks to them, and I get to do research. And
you seem kind of relaxed.
I'm happy. And thanks to my own institution, too, because they also are part of this. They're making their contribution.
You know, when we were talking about this some months ago, it struck me then that it's really not – it's you meet people all the time who say they're not religious but they're spiritual, or they're spiritual but not religious. But it's not something I necessarily ask people about. I don't stop and say, well, what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. If they say they're Catholic, or if they say they're Lutheran, or if they're Jewish, or if they're Buddhist – you kind of know, or at least you can go look it up. But there, where do you go look up the definition of spiritual but not religious?
Well, you can go online, and there's plenty of – I have a Google alert for that, and I get two or three hits a day on the Google alert at least on that term. So it is out there. But people that that identify that way and I'm looking for them, when I mention this, let's say I'm in a bookstore somewhere and they hear me and they say, oh, we heard you talking about the book you're writing. And I say, well, it's about spiritual, but not religious. And generally they go raise their hands and go, that's me, always. So but then when I interview them, they say, you know, no one's ever asked me this before. This has been wonderful. No one's asked me these questions. So it's funny that it's almost like it's in the water.
Right.
But it's not. It's so common that people aren't talking about it to each other.
614-292-8513. Chris, you're on the air with Linda Mercadante. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. There obviously are many questions, many topics that could be discussed in this. But one thing I'd like to observe is that, first of all, religion, organized religion, seems, at least to me, to be our attempt to corral the infinite. All right, which is, you know, there's only so much we can do in that regard. And religion, organized religion, is bound to have a lot of cultural accretions developing over time that serve to be a point of contention among all the various groups. And there are people who see this and regard it as being, well, counter-evolutionary, if you will. And those who are spiritual or claim to be spiritual but not religious tend to regard those who take part in our organized religion as being somewhat unevolved because they haven't gotten beyond the sense that there are all these things that are attendant to worshiping God or connecting with the greater power and so on.
There is that category, Linda. I did read about people who they just think it's the next step.
Right, right.
Thanks, Chris, for your comment. Mm-hmm. It's the next step and that everybody else just hasn't made that next step.
Well, I know that's a way to look at it, and probably people on the religious side might have their own thoughts about that coming from the other side. But I can speak from my personal experience, and that's that as a person who was spiritual but not religious for a long time and having tried many, many different things, Eastern and Western, I found that when I finally made a commitment and identified with one religion and practiced it, I gained the depth. And in fact, as a person, I evolved, I improved. My spirituality deepened considerably when I finally made the commitment to stop in one place and dig deeper rather than go broad. So from my personal experience doesn't accord with what he has said, but I do agree with him when he says it's an attempt to corral the infinite. I think it can become that. I think it's really seekers joining together to seek, but it can devolve or, you know, degrade into people trying to control God. And since you can't really control God, it doesn't work from that perspective.
I just want to mention also that Linda has started a website mm-hmm. on this topic. It's called healthybeliefs.org. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you want to go to that. Healthybeliefs.org. Why healthy beliefs?
Because I feel that when your beliefs are healthy, your spirit thrives. So I see a connection between what you believe and what you do. How you live and how you believe are intimately linked with each other. That's why I started the project, because many people said, oh, beliefs don't matter. It really doesn't matter. And I don't even have beliefs. I don't care. And as I explored and interviewed, I found that they did have quite a number of very clear beliefs, or at least ongoing beliefs, evolving beliefs. And it wasn't true that beliefs didn't matter.
They just might not be written down in a book somewhere.
Right. But they yeah. were.
Or in the same lexicon.
Yeah. Yeah. But people are reading books and talking with each other in different small groups and getting to be a little more clear about their beliefs, even though they say beliefs don't make any difference.
We have the a comment or question from Elizabeth on Facebook. She writes, is it possible that people do not want to be connected to something that tends to cause more division in our society? Religion seems to cause more problems in society than it solves, i.e. wars, terrorism, sexism, and the like.
Well, I'm glad that she asked that, because I was expecting that question, because that's what there's a few people that have written books to that effect. I think the data shows the opposite, actually. It's true that anything that can be as powerful as religion that causes people to organize is capable of great evil as well as being capable of great good. But I think if you look at the track record, not that, you know, we have time to count up everything, but if you look at the track record of what things that organized religion has contributed to society, you'll find that it's quite a lot. It's profound. In fact, right down the street is Riverside Methodist Hospital, just as one example. Universities, soup kitchens, orders of nuns and priests that care for the dying, like Mother Teresa's group and others, preservation of classical culture, people that are the first responders, like Mennonites. Mennonite Central Committee is usually the first responders. Church World Service are in the world. The Red Cross and the YM and YWCA started from religious motivations. Many universities were started that way. And many hospitals, like I said. So there's really quite a profound track record of good that's been done by people that have organized, spiritual seekers that have organized into religion.
If you want to talk to Linda Mercadante, 614-292-8513. And Mary Louise, you are on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm a middle-aged practicing Catholic, and I guess I see my children and growing up and their friends who refer to themselves as spiritual but not religious. And I guess I kind of wonder sometimes when I say, now what does that mean, when they're hard-pressed for an answer, they say, I'm a good person, I treat other people the way that they want to be treated, I treat everybody with respect. And I don't hear them mentioning anything about a deeper connection with a higher power. And I just wonder if that's kind of a cop-out term that people use when they just don't want to be they have the commitment to, you know, joining a organized religion at all, and to the point where you said you had dabbled in many different areas, but when you found one place that you were able to kind of plant your feet, your spirituality became even stronger. And I just kind of mm-hmm. wonder what the phenomenon is between the 25s and 35s that just say that just because they just don't want people to think they're bad people.
I think you're right that there is that, people trying to show that they are good people. One thing I like to do is, rather than stress the negative side, which we all can tend to do, about, you know, self-centeredness or a fear of commitment, I want to say that there's a lot of cultural and contextual factors that make people afraid to commit today. And there's also the fact that people were raised without religion, so it's almost an unknown territory, and many people are afraid. They don't know enough about it to know where to even start. It probably seems overwhelming, and so they just don't start there.
Mary Louise, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. We have an email from Deb. She says, with all due respect to your guest, it sounds like she is pretty heavily steeped in her own religious background, and therefore her research appears to reflect that prejudice. Spirituality existed long before the 1990s. To peg the growth of spirituality on 12-step groups is absurd. How about the growing wealth of information exposing organized religion for the corruption and incestual activity behind its closed doors? How about the knowledge exposing the fact that the books of the New Testament were recorded 150 to 400 years after the physical presence of the one called Jesus Christ on the planet? And, of course, we talked earlier about that actually it's evolved over a lot longer than just since 1990.
And the idea of spirituality has existed as long as human beings have existed, so I didn't say that. But the popularity of the term seems to have picked up speed in the 90s and onward to today, yeah.
Right.
But the kind of criticism that we just heard is the kind of things I do occasionally hear. But what I'm very surprised at, I have to say, is that when I started my project and I expected quite a bit of hostility and negativity towards me from my interviewees. And in fact, I was surprised that I didn't find it. They were really happy to talk to me. They didn't seem to hold what I did against me. And in fact, psychologists have found that a lot of the people that say they're spiritual but not religious don't show what they call religious distress, which means they were hurt by religion. And I've found very little religious distress in the people I've interviewed. So I've been pleasantly surprised that even people with this term are pleased to have a conversation about it and don't, you know, give out a lot of negativity. But there is that common theme now that religion has caused more harm than good, that religion is always internally fighting with each other. And I think that's partly due to the conservatism that we've seen linked in the media with religion for the last 10 or 20 years. And, you know, I understand what they're upset about.
This is from an email from BW, writes, I sometimes think I am religious, but not spiritual. I attend church very regularly and have served on the vestry. I tend to think of God following Aristotle as the guiding force of the universe, but not as a power that intervenes. Am I spiritual?
We talk about that sometimes where I work, that, you know, there is the problem with the people that are religious and not spiritual. Really better is to have both than just to have one or the other. I think that's the ideal. So everyone needs their faith revitalized from time to time. And sometimes people need to actually change to a different group or hang out with different people to get that to happen.
Catherine, welcome to the show. You're on the air with Linda Mercadante.
Thank you. My point is actually further to what you've just talked about. I am a spiritual but not religious person. I have not been religiously distressed. I would describe myself as a bit religiously disappointed. But the observation, and this is very personal, is that I believe that we who are spiritual every day are sort of tasked with having to validate our spirituality, because we don't have rules and regulations. We don't have a doctrine within which to live. I have seen members of my family and some close friends, if you will, check a box. Say, yes, I went to church, or I went to confession, or I'm a member of this group in my church, organized group. And that can sometimes lead to behavior that says, I've checked that box. Now that gives me the license to be negative or behave in some way that may not really belong holistically to the organized religion.
Okay, Catherine, your phone is like killing my ears, but I'm really glad you called. Linda?
Well, self-righteousness is definitely one of the problems in religious people. However, I find it's one of the problems in most people. So we don't actually have a corner on that market. That's why I teach theology, because I like to understand the human condition from a spiritual perspective, and it helps me a lot. I would never doubt that somebody would join a group and then do it to check a box or to, you know, lord it over somebody else. People do that for in lots of other groups as well as religion. It's just human nature, I think, and not a good thing.
Thanks for your call, Catherine. I'm serious. And let's see, 614-292-8513. We've got lots of folks waiting to talk. Rod, you're on the air. Welcome to – I'm sorry, Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm not religious or spiritual. I'm an atheist.
Okay.
And I was calling in just to support the spirit, not religious, movement. In my view, religion does a few good things, as your guest was saying, with the with the programs to help people and food banks and that sort of thing. But they do a lot of bad things as far as by nature. They kind of have to say, my way is the right way, and the other ways are wrong, so come to my church, you know. And you can get people to still do the good stuff without having to, you know, wage holy war on the other versions of religion. That's all the better for the rest of us, you know.
Okay.
That was my point.
Thanks, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
We don't have any time for any more calls, folks, so I'm sorry. Linda, you know, we're shutting down this segment, and we're moving on to another topic in the next one, but maybe you can come back and continue the conversation sometime.
I'd love to.
This is Linda Mercadante. She is Ohio professor of theology at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio. She is also the recipient of an award from the Association of Theological Schools and the Henry Luce Foundation. She's one of six faculty members in the country to be named a 2010-2011 Henry Luce III Fellows in Theology. Congratulations on
that,
Linda, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We'll be right back with Holly Zachariah, a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, to talk about another church issue, the strippers who are protesting the church in Coshocton County that's been protesting where the strippers work. We'll be right back on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Police were stumped by the murder of a restaurant manager until Richard Walter saw the crime scene and concluded it wasn't a robbery.
I found then that the primary focus was an intense anger against the victim.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Richard Walter about investigating cold cases and with Michael Capuzzo, author of The Murder Room. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on WOSU 820 NPR News. You can get access to WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen online anytime at WOSU.org. And it's 84 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:39. Sunshine today and a high of 90 degrees. Skies clearing tonight, a low of 72. For Friday, sunshine and another humid day for Friday with a high of 90. Sunshine for Saturday as well with a high of 92 degrees. There is a chance of afternoon rain on Saturday. And partly sunny on Sunday with a chance of rain and a high of 85.
Support for WOSU comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Holly Zachariah, reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
You you had the Drudge Report picked up a story that you wrote this week on a church in Coshocton County and its neighbors.
Indeed, they did. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but it certainly signals that people are talking about it.
It gets things around. A blogger that I was reading this morning picked it up from the Drudge Report and mentioned that, you know, what a great name you have too, Holly Zachariah. Gotta love her last name. I don't know if you saw that blogger or not.
That's taken on a whole other life of its own. There are these bloggers everywhere debating the whether it's prophecy that I have a biblical name and I'm writing this story about morality in rural Ohio.
So it's about the story about a conflict between adult dance. Well, how do you even describe the strip joint?
It is. The Foxhole in rural Coshocton County doesn't hold a liquor license. He's a true. It's a true cabaret. They're just dancing.
Okay.
And this church, New Beginnings Church, in also in rural Coshocton County, about 7 miles away, for 4 years has been what they call ministering, what the strip club calls protesting at the strip club every weekend. They videotape license plates, post them online, try to help the dance. They say they offer to help the dancers, discourage customers from coming into
and,
the
dance. And it's a common protest at places
of course,
like this.
Yeah. Sure. I think what's made this one different is it's gone on for 4 years this month.
Wow.
And it made its way to federal court. The Foxhole owner sued, said they were violating his constitutional rights on a number of levels, not the least of which was the freedom of expression to dance. And he lost, essentially, although it was remanded back to local court, and they did place some restrictions on the church protesters. They limited them in number, and they could not block the driveway to the establishment. So 7 weeks ago, Tommy George, the strip club owner, decided that they'd had enough. And they started a counter protest, and they're out there every Sunday morning now, largely just sitting there. It's nobody pays any attention to anyone else, but the women are out there, in their bikinis protesting the church.
Do they get paid to be out there?
He says no.
Okay.
They're out there because they want to be. And he says that he wanted to do this before. Well, actually, one of the dancers said that they'd wanted to do this before, but that it takes a lot of guts, they tell me, for the women to stand up in front of the world and say, yes, I'm a stripper. And the girls never really wanted to do that. And now they say they have a group of girls. There's 7 women who work at the club who are willing to put themselves out there, so to speak, mm-hmm. and say, I dance here and I don't do anything wrong. And you can't come over there and call me names and you know, take pictures of me and my customers.
There is an effort afoot to get the club shut down.
That's right. There's beyond just the classic sinners versus saints. I mean, it's one of the greatest stories I've ever had in my life. And beyond that, there is a very real fight over the legality of the club. You know, the Ohio laws are pretty clear on sexually oriented businesses when it comes to those that hold a liquor license. I believe they are less clear when it comes to clubs that do not. And there's debate over whether or not he does have to hold the certain hours there that he must close at midnight and no dancing can continue after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
County prosecutor says basically, how do you know they're not just in there playing cards after midnight? And so all the church says they want is make them follow the law, shut them down at midnight, and then there are some township laws that restrict hours. So essentially, if everyone followed the law that's on the books, he'd have about an hour a day for his dancers. That's what it comes down to. And he says that's crazy. So there's a legal issue as well as a moral issue playing out over there.
So how has the church responded to the protests by the dancers?
The church, at the first, when they showed up, the pastor is a genuine guy who welcomed me when we showed up over there unannounced with cameras in hand, and he said he doesn't mind them being there. They actually, some of them sit on church property under a shade tree. He said I have not run them off. He piped the services out through speakers through an open door the first few weeks, but he says the ladies danced in the streets and it became a bit of a spectacle. So he stopped doing that, and he says he doesn't mind them being there. In fact, he wishes they'd come inside and sit in the pews. And he feels like it has solidified his battle against the strip club, because he's now hearing, of course, from this story took off in on the internet in particular, but across all forms of media, and he's now hearing from conservative Christian groups around the world saying, we'll come stand with you. And one thing I didn't report that I think is interesting that he said to me was he had, prior to their protest, some of his congregation, there were 92 people there last Sunday. So it's a small church, relatively small. And he said a large number of his congregation had told him, you know, Pastor, let this go. We've fought this fight for 4 years. It was a good fight. enough energy expended already. And he says that this has now solidified his congregation, and they say they do need to save the souls of these dancers and these customers and get it out of here.
It's interesting that the pastor wishes they would just come in and sit at the pews. I suppose that the strip club owner wishes the church protesters would just come in and watch the girls dance.
That's exactly right. I think you're right. I mean, one of the reasons the story is so fascinating to me is because when I spent time with both men, Tommy George, the strip club owner, and Bill Dunphy, the pastor of the church, I firmly believe that they both believe they stand in the right. I don't think for either one of them this is about grandstanding. I really don't. I think that they believe wholeheartedly in their missions. And Tommy George, as disgusting as he might be to a certain group of society, is a businessman who's really no longer making any money in his business because nobody's coming to his club very much because the protesters are there. So I don't think it's even about money for him at this point. I think he believes that he's fighting a good fight, and so does Pastor Dunphy.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page too. You can do that if you want to talk or comment with Holly Zachariah, dispatch reporter, who's written the story about the churchgoers and the strippers protesting one another in Coshocton County. Courtney, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm so glad that you have her on to discuss this. My husband and I have been following it in the paper and whatnot. And, I just felt like I had to call in because as a conservative Christian, I could not be more on the side of these women who have to do this to make their living. Both my husband and I are Christians, and as we read this, we just got more and more horrified that what's being put out here by this pastor, however well-intentioned he may be, which I think may be up for debate, is not love and forgiveness and, the idea of compassion and taking care of neighbors and what economic reasons for poverty, why are these women having to do this to support their families to begin with, I think is a better question that the church could be asking. And instead, they're being vilified, they're being painted in this the worst light possible, and he talks about, I wish they would come in and sit down. Well, maybe if he offered them something to eat and some calm dialogue, they'd be more willing to do it. But as I said, the more I read, and I'm a Christian, I wanted to cheerlead for these ladies because it's like, how would you feel if someone just attacked you in public that way and went after you at such a level that when it said that they were dancing when he was piping the sermons out, we were cracking up. what a great way to combat something that I just think, especially as, like I said, as a Christian, as a woman, that just seems such a vicious attack on these women. And on the article, as the reporter was saying, a lot of these women instead have children. They're trying to support their families.
Well,
so
yeah.
What is the church doing to come alongside them and help their families, maybe help them transition to some job training?
Yeah.
And then after they've earned the right to speak to these women because they've earned a relationship with them, then maybe they could tell them about, this is what we think we want you to know about Jesus. After we've loved you, not after we've condemned you.
Yeah, Holly, Coshocton's pretty high unemployment rate.
It is. It's a rural area, and these women. Let me say, you are not. I don't believe you are in the minority at all. I've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails once the story went international this week, and you'd be amazed at how many. I was amazed at how many of them start out with the sentence, "I'm sure I'm in the minority, but I am in the camp of the strippers."
Yeah.
And this was not from, men who go to strip clubs every Friday and Saturday night.
They don't want anybody to know they do it.
Right. They were
right.
Women just like you. And so I think you're not in the minority. I think that people get that and people feel just like you do. In all fairness to the pastor, he has reached out to some of these women. In fact, he has a couple of dancers that he says, he's helped them. They've paid their rent over the last 4 years,
time
or two.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Tommy,
at least that small part, you know.
Right. He says he has. Now, Tommy Jordan, now I've not talked to either any of those dancers he's helped. I've asked to do that. I'm not saying that they don't exist. I just haven't made that connection yet. Tommy George
right.
says that help is short-lived, that the church will say, mm-hmm. come to us, we'll help you. They pay their rent for a month, and 6 months later, the girls have no jobs again, and there they are back at his door asking
right.
for help. And both men see themselves as the savior, you know, of these women's lifestyles. And I think the women, the girls that were there that I talked to, I should point out, not a single one of them said, I love my job.
Mm.
Are any of them anti-religion?
They didn't say they were. I asked Tommy George and I asked every one of the women, do you consider yourself a Christian? And all of them said, you know, it's interesting that the first hour of your show was about spirituality versus religion.
Right.
Because that was essentially their answer. Huh. I'm spiritual, but I'm not really. I don't go to church every Sunday. You know, Gina Hughes, the house mom, said to me, I pray every day. I pray for tolerance. I pray for patience. And I pray that God watches out for me and my safety of my children. And I believe her when she says that. I believe she did. But it is a rural, depressed area. It is a sad and sorry looking little club. I don't know what the women make. I printed what they said they make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're happy to have a job. I don't think they're happy to have that job. But I also believe that they think Tommy George is looking out for their best interests.
Mm-hmm. Courtney, thanks for your call.
Absolutely. Thanks for having this on.
You bet.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. If you want to talk to Holly Zachariah and Kieran, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that there are, I agree with the economic reasons to strip and do other things that you normally wouldn't do. I work at Ohio State, and they passed a bill back in 2006, the Board of Trustees, House Bill 187, to if they abolish your job, they take away all your pay raises. So I went from making almost $20 an hour. It took me 24 years to almost make $20 an hour. But once they abolished my job, they placed me in another job, but they passed a bill to take away all my raises. So now I'm making about $10 an hour. So when unions lose power, and the union at Ohio State is pretty anemic right now, and around the state, lots of unions are losing power. People have to do whatever they can. So if there's a moral issue, Ohio State has a moral issue not to take away their employees' raises.
So, Holly, I guess the point Kieran's making is that times are hard.
that's absolutely right. But I don't think none of these women said to me, I have no other choice. I mean, I want to make that clear. It wasn't I strip because I have no other choice. They said nobody said I love my job and mm-hmm. I love to go in every day.
But they make pretty good money, though, they say.
They say they make pretty good money. You know, I don't know why they do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they go every day, but I know that you know, for all of us, a job is a job these days. And I don't know if somebody came in there tomorrow and offered them another job if they'd take it. I don't know, and that's a question I should have asked them.
Kieran, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Have the protests done that much damage? The church protests, I should say, against the strip club.
He says it has destroyed his business.
But they're all still working.
They're all still working, and the protests, up until this point, the protests had died down. They were there every night for a long time, and then it got to where they were just there on the weekends, and now the church is usually only there. And again, the court limited them to 15 protesters at a time, so it was, at some point, back when it started, the church would have 70 or 80 people in that parking lot.
Mm.
So now the court limited them to 15. So now it's 15 people, and they're there either on Friday or Saturday night. They're there once a week. Each week. And so my guess is, and Tommy George tells me that on the other nights they're not here, he might have some business. But on the nights that they're there, you know, folks will come up, turn around, leave, because they're not going to walk past that or have their car or their face on video, that sort of thing. He says it's destroyed his business. But yet he has seven dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really small building, and he's got seven women working for him. So he's making... he's making money somehow. There's somebody still going in there.
You can send us an email if you'd like. You can go to allsides@wosu.org if you want to have a, make a comment that way. And we have an email now from Mark. He writes, why are fundamentalist Christians so preoccupied with other people's behavior? Why is it so important to them that nobody anywhere experience any pleasure or do anything they enjoy? Why do they get to dictate to others? We don't tell them how to behave in their churches. A lot of emails to that effect to you, Holly?
Definitely on the internet. That's the strongest sentiment, you know, sort of mind your own business and mind your own house. But for Pastor Dunphy, he believes at, I mean, as long as there's been history, as long as there have been churches, the churches see themselves, I believe, that they act as the moral compass of a community. And he believes that they are a God-fearing, quiet Christian community that, and it is his obligation, he believes, to rid the community of evil. And my favorite line that he said was in my story, and it was, you cannot share territory with the devil. And I thought that was just a fantastic sentiment that I thought he believed. Now, whether I agree with it or not is neither here nor there. He believes it's his job to rid that community of evil.
How close are they to each other?
7 miles between them. Warsaw, where the church is just a little village of like 700, less than 700 people. It's, you know, one gas station and just a real small little crossroads. Newcastle, where the church, where the strip club is literally a crossroads. I mean, it's not even a village. It's at the corner of a line of about 10 houses.
Mm-hmm. I think it was in your story yesterday that somebody from an organization of exotic dance businesses or strip clubs, I might be mistaken.
Correct, no.
But said that no one has ever done this before.
You're right. Greg Flagg, who runs the Owners Coalition, and I'm sorry, I forget exactly what the Ohio yeah. Owners Coalition, I think, is what it is, and it's one of two lobbying organizations on behalf of cabarets and show bars and strip clubs in Ohio. And he said, you know, it's just nobody's ever heard of anything like this anywhere. And my understanding, my internet surf control at work won't let me see it, but my understanding is that, you know, strippers, personal websites all across the country have posted the link and basically, you know, we stand with you, sisters kind of thing.
Have there been any other examples of this popping up, of this kind of protests?
That I'm aware of or that I could find readily available.
Are the emails still pouring in?
Today's a little more quiet, so I will see with all of your listeners, but they've slowed down some. People have moved on, I think.
I've been meaning to ask what spurred your interest in the first place. Was it the court proceedings?
No, I had a tip from somebody. And people have asked me, like, did Tommy George, did the uh-huh. pastor call you? Did the club owner call you? Mm-hmm. And somebody tipped me that this was happening and that nobody seemed to care. And I went to my boss and I said, I'll volunteer my time. I care. I'm going. And I wasn't working that Sunday. I wasn't scheduled to work.
A true martyr.
The way we went. Yeah.
A true martyr.
I said, it might be nothing, but I said, I'm thinking there's a story.
Okay. Well, I guess you thought right. Holly Zachariah, the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Take care. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.